So, Luke chapter 5, verse 33. They said to him, John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees. But yours go on eating and drinking. Jesus answered, can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he's with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. In those days they will fast. He told them this parable. No one tears a piece out of a new garment to patch an old one. Otherwise, they'll have torn the new garment, and the patch from the new will not match the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins, the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. No, new wine must be poured into new wineskins. And no one after drinking old wine wants the new, for they say the old is better.
Caroline, for reading that. So what difference does Jesus make to the world around us, to your friends, to you? In the last census, back in 2011, just under 60% replied, identifying themselves as a Christian. But today, I don't think anywhere near that number will be in a church. Another survey suggested around 10% of people will go to church at least once a month. So what difference does Jesus make to that other 50%? My guess is that for most, not much. I think we can see that played out around us as society's attitudes and even the laws in this country move further and further away from a Christian background. And for us here today, what difference does Jesus make? Enough for you to hear on a Sunday, obviously. But tomorrow at work, when you're sat in a meeting, or at home with the children on their summer holidays, does the busyness of life or other priorities take over? Does following Jesus just mean coming to a church on a Sunday, maybe reading your Bible now and then, and saying some prayers when you can? Or is it something more than that? In the passage we're looking at today, Jesus has something to say about this and about the difference he makes in people's lives. The passage follows on from the one we were looking at last week, where Jesus and his followers are at a great party thrown in his honour by Levi, a tax collector. And back in that passage, the Pharisees were surprised by who Jesus was hanging out with. And their surprise continues in our passage today. But this time, they're surprised by how Jesus' followers are acting. And that's the first thing we'll look at. Following Jesus is different. Look back with me to that, the first verse of that passage in verse 33. They said to him, John's disciples often fast and pray, and so do the disciples of the Pharisees. But yours go on eating and drinking. Well, the writer Luke doesn't clearly tell us who is speaking here. He just introduces them as they. But most likely it's the Pharisees from back in verse 30. These Pharisees are surprised and can't understand why Jesus' disciples don't fast. It's like being invited to the Queen to have afternoon tea with the Queen, expecting tea in fancy cups and cucumber sandwiches and all those fancy things. But instead, when you walk through the doors, she grabs a can of Stella from a six-pack and throws it to you and points to a load of Domino's pizzas on the table. But it's something completely different to what you'd expect. The Pharisees are surprised because fasting is the established and expected way for the religious people of the day to act. In fact, the Pharisees and their disciples, they do it twice a week. Now, the Pharisees don't normally get a good press in the Gospels, so it's quite easy to say, to dismiss their ways as wrong or just for show. And maybe there is a part of that in what they do. But did you also notice back there in verse 33? It's not just the Pharisees. John, and that's John the Baptist, his followers often fast. This is the same John that back in chapter 3 was pointing people to Jesus. So we can't just dismiss this as wrong. In fact, it's a common Old Testament practice, such as we can see in Daniel chapter 9, which is on the screens. I turned to the Lord God and pleaded with him in prayer and petition, in fasting and in sackcloth and ashes. Fasting, along with prayer, was a way of repenting before God and calling on him to act and forgive. So fasting was a common practice of the day and common in the Old Testament. And then comes along Jesus and his followers. And they don't. In fact, they're at a lavish party. Jesus' followers are not like what the religious of the people of the day are used to. Following Jesus today can, and in many ways should be, different to the society around us. Like being the odd one out when everyone else is into the latest office gossip. Or being honest in that work meeting when your friends would rather you bent the truth just that little bit to make the team look better. Following Jesus is different. So why stand out and be different? Why were the disciples different here? That's the question behind verse 33. And the answer is, because of who Jesus is. Look back with me to how Jesus responds in verse 34. Jesus answered, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them. In those days they will fast." Jesus answers them with a wedding scene, a happy, joyous occasion, a time when it would be ridiculous to fast, to be effectively mourning. Can you imagine if you turned up to a wedding and half the guests were wearing black ties or black dresses as if it was a funeral? It's just not right. Well, weddings nowadays can be quite lavish affairs, but back then they regularly lasted for a week. A whole week of feasts and celebrations where even the priests and the Pharisees would give up their weekly fasting to join in and celebrate. And that's what Jesus is saying here. They can't fast now. Now is a time to enjoy, to celebrate. It's a time to enjoy because he, Jesus, the bridegroom, is there. Jesus answered, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them?" Now that's quite a claim. Jesus is saying that he's someone so important that the normal way of life should be put on hold. And instead, they should be rejoicing about him. And in calling himself the bridegroom, he's claiming something even bigger. Any Pharisee listening would have known their Old Testament. And that picture of the bridegroom or husband is a picture of the relationship between God and his people. Like in Isaiah chapter 54 that we read just earlier. Just look back with me again at verses 5-7. They're on the screen if you can read them in that size. "For your maker is your husband. The Lord Almighty is his name. The Holy One of Israel is your Redeemer. He is called the God of all the earth. The Lord will call you back as if you were a wife deserted and distressed in spirit. A wife who married young, only to be rejected, says your God. For a brief moment I abandoned you, but with deep compassion I will bring you back." Jesus is claiming that he's God, the husband that they've been waiting for to restore them, to show them compassion and kindness. The very one that they've been fasting and praying to all this time is here right in front of them. But they don't recognize him. They should have done. The disciples did. Just scan through this chapter of Luke with me. In the first few verses, Jesus sends Simon Peter to a massive catch of fish. And we can see his reaction in verse 8. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." And then when Jesus calls Peter and his friends to follow him in verse 11, well, they pulled up their boats upon shore, left everything, and followed him. Peter, James, John, and later Levi in verse 28, they all see who Jesus is, and they give up everything and follow him, and now they enjoy being with him. But the Pharisees, well, they heard Jesus claim to be God. Skip forward to verse 21 with me. The Pharisees and the teachers of the law began thinking to themselves, "Who is this fellow who speaks blasphemy? Who can forgive sins but God alone?" And they saw him do a miracle just a few verses later in verse 24. "But I want you to know that the Son of Man has authority on earth to forgive sins." So he said to the paralyzed man, "I tell you, get up, take your mat, and go home." But they still don't get it. In fact, soon they'll be plotting against Jesus. They just don't see who Jesus is. A royal policeman once told the story of when the Queen went for a walk near her home in Balmoral. She went out in a normal coat and a headscarf, something a bit like this. So low-key was her look that a group of American tourists completely failed to recognise who she was. She played along with the tourists when they asked, "Do you live around here?" She simply replied that, yeah, she had a house nearby. And when they asked if she'd met the Queen, she gestured to her companion and said, "No, but he has." If those tourists knew who they were speaking to, they'd have acted completely differently. And the same is true of these Pharisees. Understanding who Jesus is makes all the difference in how we act. So what about today, in 2018? Who do you think Jesus is? Maybe you don't think much of him. Maybe he's just a nice guy with some moral teachings. But it doesn't really make much difference to day-to-day life. Maybe you think he's a con artist, claiming that he's God, just to get people on his side to join his cult. Or maybe you're just not sure. Well, if any of those things are true for you, please can I encourage you to look into who Jesus really is. Yes, he lived 2,000 years ago. But he made big claims. Big claims that are still important today. He claimed to be God, to be the one that can forgive us, and to bring us back into a relationship with himself. Please continue to look at the rest of Luke and consider who Jesus really is. Or if you have any questions, quiz your Christian friends, or me, I'll be at the back here at the end of the service. And if you're following Jesus, what difference does that make to your life, day to day? Week to week? Should we be celebrating like the disciples here? Well, Jesus talks about that too. These two verses tell us a bit more. Following Jesus is different because of who and where Jesus is. Look back again at those two verses from verse 34. Jesus answered, "Can you make the friends of the bridegroom fast while he is with them? But the time will come when the bridegroom will be taken from them, and those days they'll fast." Did you see the difference in those two verses? Again, it's all about Jesus the bridegroom, but the difference is where he is compared to his followers. In verse 34, when Jesus is with them, they celebrate. But then in verse 35, when he's gone, then they'll fast. There's nothing wrong with fasting, but at that moment, it was just the wrong time to fast. When Jesus talks about being taken from them, he's looking forward to the cross, At that time, the disciples will mourn. But he's also looking forward further. In Acts chapters 13 and 14, after Jesus has gone up to heaven, we can see fasting in the lives of the early church. Today, we're in a similar position to that early church. Jesus is no longer walking around with us. He's in heaven. And one day he'll return. So should we fast today? Well, there's no biblical commitment for Christians to fast. But we can also see it in the New Testament. So it's something that's up to you. If you find it helpful, then do. But don't feel you have to. But the feeling and the principle behind it, mourning for sin, seeking forgiveness, and wanting God to act, well, they all should be part of a Christian life as we wait for Jesus to return. But so too should the joy and celebration that we see in the lives of the disciples. We're no longer like the Pharisees or John's disciples, waiting for God to bring that forgiveness. Now, Jesus has come, and on the cross, he's offered that forgiveness to all. And so we can take great joy and comfort that what we need has been achieved. Well, so far, Jesus has only really been talking about fasting. But as we move on to the last few verses now, we can see the full extent of what it means to follow Jesus. Following Jesus is different because of who and where Jesus is, and that changes everything. That changes everything. Look back at those parables at the start of verse 36. He told them this parable. No one tears a piece of the new garment to patch a piece out of a new garment to patch an old one. Otherwise, they'll have torn the new garment, and the patch from the new will not match the old. And no one pours new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the new wine will burst the skins, the wine will run out, and the wineskins will be ruined. Now, new wine must be poured into new wineskins. And no one, after drinking old wine, wants the new, for they say the old is better. Well, as Jesus often does, he uses what would have been everyday pictures to explain his point. These pictures might not be quite so obvious to us now, where we're more used to wine bottles and the ease of buying new clothes when we need them. But I think the main point is still clear. There's a difference between old and new. They can't go together. And if we try, well, it doesn't work and it will go wrong. It leads to problems. The first parable is perhaps a bit more familiar to us. I guess most of us have had an old piece of clothing that's past its best. Faded, lost buttons, holes at the knees, frayed ends, that kind of thing. I've got an old pair of jeans like that that I've kept for DIY. So on top of everything else, they're covered in paint as well. Well, the last thing I'd do is go and buy a brand new pair of jeans, cut it up to fix the holes in my old tatty pair. I'd be ruining a perfectly good pair of jeans to fix something that I hardly ever use. Jesus is saying, just like you wouldn't do that with clothes, well, you can't do that with me either. He's the new way. You can't just pick the bits about him that you like and patch them onto your old life, your old way. And the second parable is similar. Old wineskins would have dried out and become brittle. So if you poured new wine into it that was still fermenting, well, as the wine fermented and produced gas, the pressure would build and build until the wineskin couldn't take it anymore, and it would break, and the wine would go everywhere. But a new wineskin, well, that would still be supple, and it would be able to take that pressure from that fermenting wine. We can't just take Jesus and fit him into our old ways. A new container is needed. A new way of life is needed for following Jesus. The old way, the Old Testament way of relating to God for the Pharisees and John the Baptist followers here in this passage, is no longer appropriate. But it's not because Jesus is saying the Old Testament is wrong. In Matthew, Jesus says, "Do not think that I've come to abolish the law or the prophets. I've not come to abolish them, but to fulfill them." A new way of living, of worshipping God, is needed because Jesus came and fulfilled the whole Old Testament. What was a picture, a shadow, has now become reality in Jesus. And so many of the Old Testament ways are just no longer appropriate. Fasting at that time is just one example. The correct thing to do in the Old Testament times, to seek forgiveness, to ask God to act. But here, Jesus is doing just that, fulfilling that request. So at that time, it wasn't needed. But Jesus fulfilled the whole Old Testament, like the sacrificial system. He became on the cross the one sacrifice for all. So no longer do we need to offer animal sacrifices daily. Well, the Old Testament is still relevant, but it now needs to be viewed and acted out through Jesus, who he is and what he's done. He changes everything. The last of the three parables in verse 39 at first looks a bit confusing. "And no one, after drinking old wine, wants the new, for they say the old is better." But if the new wine of the other parable is Jesus, why would he now say the old is better? But like Jesus often does when teaching, he lays down a challenge for those listening. You think the old is better. You don't like the look of the new. You won't accept it. Change can be difficult and uncomfortable. It's easier to stick with what we're familiar with. But when we choose to follow Jesus, that's what he calls us to do, to change. So what does it mean for us today? Jesus calls us to rethink what we would otherwise desire, how we'd otherwise act, and to think through what that looks like with Jesus at the centre. Well, it will be different for all of us. It could be tempted to be more career-minded than Jesus-minded, or perhaps desiring that beautiful house more than desiring God's plan for where we live, or being invested in our children's sporting success over and above their and our relationship with God. We need to change whatever it is to make Jesus the centre of our lives. Careers, houses, family, they're all good things. But they're ways we can serve Jesus now, rather than things to live for. We can't just patch Jesus onto our lives, carry on how we want, just with a Sunday service and a few prayers tacked on here and there. Now, I don't know what you've got planned for this week, if you'll be at work or at home with the children on some holidays. But whatever you have planned, will you be doing it for Jesus? It can be hard. Our own ways and the ways of others around us can be appealing. But that's what it means to truly follow Jesus. And in the end, it's more than worth it. So going back to that original question, what difference does Jesus make? Well, first, he'll only make a difference if we truly appreciate who he is. Jesus is the bridegroom. Jesus is God the Son, come down to earth so that we can be forgiven. It's a big claim, and if you don't think that's true, please continue to look into it. But if you are following Jesus, the difference he makes is huge. Knowing who Jesus is makes us rethink everything around him. Following Jesus requires a new way of life. We can't just tack him on to the way we want to do things.